Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3, and Claire Huang is the Hong Kong correspondent for The Straits Times. She joins us every week with an update and analysis of the latest from the territory. Claire, always a pleasure.
Hi, Howie. It's good to speak to you again.
So Singapore and Hong Kong, that much-lauded travel bubble, landmark arrangement between the financial hubs, would possibly establish the world's first two-way travel bubble. So this week, Hong Kong's Secretary for Commerce and Economic Development, Edward Yao, said the travel bubble could start with one daily flight between the two hubs. What does this mean, you think, for international tourism?
Well, Howie, if this is an arrangement that works well, it would pave the way for other cities and nations to do the same, right? It's like a benchmark type of thing, you know, where Singapore and Hong Kong iron out all nitty-gritties. But it doesn't mean that tourism will go back to its heydays, yeah, pre-COVID. This would be light at the end of a very long tunnel and provide some sort of respite or cushion to the tourism sector, to the aviation sector. But it's going to take a while to go back to the heydays, pre-COVID, that is.
Are you seeing demand, though, in Hong Kong for people to do this, to want to do this, the impact this is having on travellers?
Well, the thing is, you have got the most excited group of people will be Singaporeans who want to go back, right? And they don't want to have to do the mandatory quarantine, so they're actually quite excited about it. But if you're looking at what the locals here, the local tour operators are saying, they have told Mr. Edward Yao that, you know, the feedback was that it's going to benefit only a small group of people. And they're not wrong, because in Hong Kong, people want to go to Japan. They want to go to Taiwan. They want to go to South Korea more than they want to go to Singapore.
Mm.
So what does this mean? But then, of course, I have spoken to, you know, other friends, right, who are saying that finally we can travel somewhere, you know, without quarantine, and let's make a trip to Singapore. So they're planning, you see. But if you look at the most of the locals here, they prefer to go to other places other than Singapore. So we're not quite sure how it's going to work out.
Do you think the cost of testing might have an impact on demand? It's not looking too cheap, if you will.
Yes, so the cost of a test is about 300 or so in Singapore, right, for one test. In Hong Kong, it's almost about the same. You're eligible for free testing, but then to be eligible means that you must show symptoms, yeah? That doesn't include the consultation of 180 Hong Kong dollars at public hospitals. So the exchange rate is about 5.5, you make it about $30 for consultation fees, yeah? But at private hospitals or clinics, the cost of the test itself is at least 1,500. That's like about $250, you know, and it's not inclusive consultation of about $200, Hong Kong $200. It's quite exorbitant in that sense, you know, especially if you look at a family of four. That's going to cost a bomb, you know, and on top of that, air tickets, because of the quota, we are looking at supply and demand factors, right? And so if they're going to limit the number of people on the flight, then you're going to have a quota. If you're going to have a quota, that means demand will outweigh supply, and then the prices, air tickets would also go up. So, you know, when you add everything together, it doesn't look very cheap, yeah.
Mm.
Prices have started to climb, and I find it quite amusing because some of them are looking at ticket prices and they want to book flights. You know, apparently some people have booked flights even without knowing which is the bubble flight. So, you know, because things are not ironed out, I guess they will just have to do the 7-day stay home notice.
Mm.
And so this is the other thing, right, about the cost of this, because the whole idea of the travel bubble is to get rid of the quarantine. So now you've got two options, right? The travel bubble gets rid of the quarantine, but the cost of the test is exorbitant.
Mm.
On a family of four, maximum two tests per person. That's like $600 to $800 a pop for one person. And this cost has raised questions, and some Singaporeans here are saying that they'd rather do a 7-day stay-home notice without having to pay so much for the test. This travel bubble arrangement also leads us to other questions, and this is something that the two governments have to think about. So will you be allowing two options to exist? That is, currently we have the 7-day stay-home notice. It's got quarantine, but no tests. Okay, so it's cheaper for travellers, but it's more costly for the Singapore government. Why? Because you've got to have people to track, you have resources basically put to ensure that these people are following the quarantine,
yeah.
You know, they're not breaching rules and things like that. then you have the second option, which is the travel bubble, which is more expensive because of the testing, the cost of flights, but presumably safer. So now they have to sort out whether they want to have two options together, coexist, or not. How are they going to work this out? So that remains to be seen, you see, because this issue in itself, if I was talking to people in aviation, and they're saying that if you're going to have two sets of systems, then logistically it's simply too much. Imagine every travel bubble that you do with someone else and you have at home, back home, your own different set where you allow people to not do tests and to do quarantine and things like that. So it's quite confusing.
Let's talk about the Hong Kong government also relaxing social distancing rules in the city. Might you see some impact on travel agencies, local tour operators maybe, things looking up a bit?
They have relaxed some of the social distancing measures, so local tour group welcomed this. I think they've been, as far as I understand, they have been lobbying the government for quite a bit because, as you know, tourism contributes to about 4.5% of Hong Kong's GDP in 2018. This has all been wiped out, obviously, this year. They were saying that, you know, they cannot survive anymore, the business cannot survive anymore. So from tomorrow onwards, licensed travel agencies will be allowed to run tour groups of not more than 30 people. So this is good news. Officials have said that the agencies will be required to record personal information, contact details of travellers, check their temperature, basically the norm, what is now the norm, right?
Yep.
And ensure that they wear face masks at all times, except when they're eating. And agencies found to have breached the rules could lose their license. In addition, weddings can now accommodate up to 50 people instead of the current 20. Mm. But get this, no food or drinks, Howie. If you attend a wedding in Hong Kong from tomorrow onwards, you will not be able to eat or drink. And this... So would you attend a wedding like that, if that's the case? No food, no drinks?
Might have to bring my own sandwich.
So you're not allowed to eat or drink, and that has ruffled a lot of people's feathers, obviously. Mm. So they're saying, how ridiculous is this? You know, you're going to up the number of people, but then you don't allow food or drinks. So I think the idea is you remove your mask when you're drinking or you're having food, so they don't want that, because they say the risk of spreading any virus, if somebody's positive, then that goes up, the risk goes up. So I think that was the reason.
So let's talk about then the impact maybe this bubble might have on Cathay Pacific Group, because they announced they'll be cutting 8,500 jobs overall, 24% of the normal headcount, and also ending their regional Cathay Dragon brand. What do you know?
Well, for the cuts, Cathay Dragon will cease operations. It's not coming back. The chairman of the group has made this clear, although some of the people here are quite upset about it. Of the total cuts, right, Howie, 5,300 are jobs that are Hong Kong-based. A further 600 are based overseas. They may be affected, subject to local regulations, of course. And then the remaining 2,600 jobs are positions that are already vacant and they're not filled. So currently, it's still too early to tell what kind of impact or whether these cuts will be the end of the cuts, you know. Although the unionists are saying this is not the case, they don't think that this is the case, right? But at least the cuts will give them some breathing space. I guess the travel bubble also gives the aviation sector more hope. So talking about unionists, right? Chairwoman of the Confederation of Trade Unions, Carol Ng, has said that Cathay Pacific's move for the cuts and the restructuring will put pressure on other employers to follow suit. So it will pave the way for other companies to do the same. Meanwhile, the Cathay Pacific's Flight Attendants Union has expressed concern about, you know, more cuts, more layoffs, and it has accused the airline of failing to take into consideration cost-cutting measures proposed by them. The union said that 2,000 Cathay cabin crew are among the more than 5,000 Hong Kong-based employees sacked on Wednesday.
Mm. Yeah. Hong Kong's seasonally adjusted unemployment rose slightly to 6.4% in the period from July to September, but the figure is the highest in close to 16 years, right? Do we know where these numbers might be heading in the coming months?
The numbers could go up. depending on when the fourth wave comes. I'm saying this because the government actually was talking about how the jobless rate rose in July and August, which was a third wave. We're expecting similar trends for fourth wave, and also government data has shown that the city's unemployment rate has been increasing for months, right?
Yeah.
As the pandemic basically decimates trade, travel. The latest period, which covers July to September, the jobless figure for sectors relating to consumption and tourism spiked to 11.7%. This is the highest level since SARS in 2003. So overall, the outlook is gloomy because the economic situation remains weak, and it's not just Hong Kong. Obviously, the mainland China is the one that bucks the trend, but the global pandemic is still evolving, right? We're still in the middle of it. So the labour market will remain under pressure in the near term.
All right, Claire, thanks for your updates. You take care.
Thank you, Howie.
Claire Huang is the Hong Kong correspondent for The Straits Times. This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.